Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Russia Today is exposed. Pentagon leak reveals NATO special forces in Ukraine. Surprise, surprise. They were just getting confirmation from documents that have been leaked. One of the classified military documents leaked online shows a presence of 97 NATO special forces operators in Ukraine as of March 1st, of which 50 were British. The Guardian reported it had two files, dated late February and early March, listing 50 British special ops that had been active in Ukraine. The U.S. had 14, France, another 15. The documents were labeled secret, prepared for senior U.S. defense officials. They contained information about NATO military operation, logistics, weapon deliveries, and training of Ukrainian troops. Another outlet declassified noted the 14 U.S. special ops were among 29 Pentagon personnel present in Ukraine, including a Marine security detachment at the U.S. Embassy in Kiev and attachés. Another 71 State Department personnel were listed in the country as well, a total of 100 Americans. Declassified also said the slide was marked not releasable to foreign nationals. My U.S. special ops come from two units, Navy SEALs and the Army's Delta Force. The British definition extends beyond the Special Air Service to paratroopers, Marines, and other units. The Prime Minister is not obligated to brief Parliament on their deployment. Dozens of classified U.S. military docs have been discovered online over the past week, attracting considerable media attention. The U.S. government has not officially confirmed their authenticity, but the Pentagon has launched a hunt for whoever may have leaked them, and the DOJ is conducting a criminal investigation as well, which obviously thereby confirms that they are indeed authentic. Russia and Ukraine have largely shrugged them off as irrelevant because they already knew. You may recall the report I had of the Dagger missile hitting a deep underground base that had a lot of NATO officers. It might just have been the very individuals being described here. While Washington and London have never officially confirmed the presence of their forces in Ukraine, Multimedia outlets have reported on it over the past year. In April 2022, for example, Le Figaro, a French daily, reported SAS and Delta Force had been present since the beginning of Russia's special military operation. Remember, the whole Minsk agreements were used just as a cover leaf for strengthening, preparing Ukraine for a Russian intrusion. And it would have been at that point in time that NATO would have made its introduction of officers for command and control, as well as massive quantities of equipment, the vast majority of which appears to have been long since expanded. The British Daily Mirror reported dozens of retired SAS operators gone to Ukraine, funded through a private military company. Shortly after, the Times said they'd return to teach Kiev's soldiers how to operate British-made anti-tank rockets. The outlet Gray Zone reported in November British special ops had been working through a private company called Prevail Partners to train Ukrainian saboteurs targeting Crimea. In December, a British military publication admitted up to 300 Royal Marines had been deployed to Ukraine for discreet operations. Meanwhile, and the arrogance of this just boggles the mind, U.S. resumes biolab program in Ukraine. Washington is constructing secretive new facilities and is training personnel. The U.S. has quietly resumed its controversial biolab program in Ukraine and is focusing on the construction of secretive new facilities and training their personnel, the Russian Ministry of Defense reports. A new trove of documents on U.S.-funded biological programs in Ukraine has been presented by the commander of Russia's nuclear, biological, and chemical defense forces, Lieutenant General Igor Kilov, during a media briefing last Friday. He cited the protocol from a meeting dated October 20, 2022, attended by representatives of the U.S. Threat Reduction Agency and multiple Ukrainian officials, as well as figures from the Jacobs CH2M Engineering Company. The meeting focused on resuming biological research in Ukraine. Now, the project has been resumed with focus on renewal of legislative support, revision of train schedule, as well as conclusion and resumption of construction work, the Ukraine language protocol stated. The program was previously known as Joint Biological Research, but had been rebranded as Biological Control Research. It cited concerns over an alleged Russian disinformation campaign on the issue. U.S. has engaged in damage control efforts to prevent potential leaks from Ukrainian specialists on the true nature of the biological research program. Hiding from responsibility for participating in military biological product, many suspects left the territory of Ukraine. To prevent a possible leak of information about the illegal activities of the Pentagon, the U.S. is taking emergency measures to search for and return them. U.S. damage control began shortly after the outbreak of the conflict in February of 2022. The Russian military presented a draft memo entitled Reducing the Threat of Ukrainian Expertise Proliferating to U.S. Adversaries, penned by one Laura Derlinger, a senior counter-proliferation advisor with the Department of State. The Russian invasion of Ukraine has resulted in the exodus of highly capable technical experts from Ukrainian facilities that produce missile components and advanced conventional weapons, as well as those with expertise that could be redirected and exploited by others for chemical, biological, radiological, or nuclear weapon, reads the memo, which is dated March 11, 2022. Moscow has raised allegations of the sprawling network of secretive U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine early in the conflict, since it published troves of documents about it. Russia took the issue of biolabs to the UN last October, requesting an international probe. A motion, however, was turned down by the UN Security Council, with the U.S., UK, and France voting against it. Oh, of course. You can't expect these monsters, these criminals, these violators of international law, to be willing to allow an investigation that would expose their complicity. Very interesting piece from Mike King, the anti-New York Times, for those who are unfamiliar. He does a great job. Here we have the New York Times, and these are articles to which he's going to reply. China and Russia have formed an alliance of autocracies. Chinese broker deal upends Middle East diplomacy and challenges U.S. Russia exerts growing influence in Africa, worrying many in the West. China widens economic role in Latin America. With Afghan collapse, Moscow takes charge in Central Asia. China and the U.S. are wooing Indonesia, and Beijing has the edge. China is winning in Asia. Biden's plans won't change that. Rebuttal by the anti-New York Times. The Rothschild-sourced New World Order is dead. Long live the multipolar world in which regional powers keep the peace in their own backyards while respecting the sovereignty of even the smallest nations. From Central America to Latin America to Africa to the Middle East to Central Asia to the Far East, the pattern of nations freeing themselves from the yoke of American tyranny, itself a function of globalist tyranny, is unmistakable. It was Putin and Xi who set this geopolitical transformation in motion years before Trump came onto the world stage. But it was Trump's peaceful foreign policy, so masterfully concealed by strategic bombast and bluster, which dealt the final blow to the centuries-old scheme to conquer every nation on earth for the New World Order. Look around the globe. As far as we can tell, other than the limited military action in eastern Ukraine, which soon will be resolved in Russia's favor, and some minor flare-ups in Gaza and the West Bank, there are no wars, proxy wars, or even potential wars on the horizon to be seen. Syria is recovering. Saudi Arabia and Iran have kissed and made up. Arab states are recognizing Israel as the shitty little state itself, boxed in by greater powers now, is behaving itself. The CIA, Mossad, front ISIS, when active in 30 countries, is gone. The two Koreas are at peace. Even the Prime Minister of Pakistan is calling for good relation with India now. What the heck happened to this crazy, bloody, violent world all of a sudden? Answer? Former and also current President Trump happened. That's what. War is of necessity, blood beverage of globalist vampires. The necessary blood beverage of globalist vampires. But with a New World Order meddling, marauding, murdering, mercenary U.S. hitman and its intel proxies no longer bribing, blackmailed, and bombing the subject nations of the world, saner heads under the protection of Russia and China are prevailing everywhere. As Xi Jinping recently stated during his recent visit to Moscow, China and Russia are ready to stand guard over the world order based on international law. Tell it, Xi, tell it. Be not alarmed over Xi's use of the term world order. What he and Putin and Trump have always said is that the international situation must be based upon respect for national sovereignty. These men are talking about keeping the peace, establishing harmonious commercial relations, not a tyrannical one-world government built upon satanic degeneracy. Here we have reports about it. Is the United States creating a legion of doom? The emerging China-Russia-Iran axis may force the U.S. to choose between some unappealing options. Another from the Jerusalem Post. Russia-Israel tensions will continue to mount, Russian experts. Moscow might activate Iran, Syria, or Hamas without considering the outcome, former Putin speechwriter tells the media line. As the world breaks free of the cabal, and embraces a Trump World Order model of mutually respective nationalism. It is with great delight and side-splitting laughter to behold a master pretend, for the sake of optics, that this is a bad thing brought about by the incompetence of Joe Biden. With multiple exclamation points, an angry Trump posted his disgust over what is happening on Biden's watch to Truth Social, a post which was picked up by many media outlets. Have a good look and a good laugh. Peace out. Donald J. Trump. China, Russia, and Iran, not to mention North Korea and other countries, have placed the U.S. in a very bad and dangerous position. They are dividing up the world as we sit around and let them do it. They no longer respect the U.S., but they will. Some images and comments. Trump was always a dove. After he became president, he often concealed his true peace agenda by talking like a warmonger. Candidate Trump in January 2016. Wouldn't it be nice if we actually got along with Russia and China and all these countries? Wouldn't it be nice? If you pay attention and utilize Mike's maxim of reversal, the slimes will always tell you who the good guys are. Here they're attacking Xi, Putin, and Trump, the strongmen follies, Thomas Friedman. Meanwhile, Bubis Americanus won. I read in the New York Times today that Russia and China are flexing their muscle all over the world. Bubis Americanus, too. That's scary. I'll say one thing about Trump. Russia and China were afraid to mess with him like they are with Biden. Saint Sugar Pot of Haze. I just can't with these frickin' two ass clowns no more. I just can't. Editor, it's okay, baby girl. That's exactly what Trump wants them to believe. It's much simpler. Meanwhile, new report. He's guilty. Federal judge exposes Biden. Oh, my God. In moments like this, one must wonder, what the hell does a Biden admin think? They had to know this was going to court. They had to know the truth about their role in this tyrannical raid was going to come to light. So how did they let this happen? Was it that they thought the entire media would stonewall for them? Perhaps they did. Perhaps they will. However, there's one thing they did not count on. That is the Gateway Pundit and Jim Hobb. The Gateway Pundit reported. On pages 2 and 3 of a ruling of Judge Cannon revealed it was Joe Biden who ordered the FBI access to Mar-a-Lago documents and President Trump's personal belongings, reading from the actual court order. On April 12, 2022, NARA notified plaintiff that it intended to provide the 15 boxes to the Federal Bureau of Investigation the following week. Plaintiff then requested an extension on the contemplated delivery, so he could determine the existence of any privileged material. The White House counsel's office granted the request. On May 10th, NARA informed plaintiff that it would proceed with providing the FBI access to the records in question as requested by the incumbent president, beginning as early as Thursday, May 12th. The government's filing states that the FBI did not obtain access to the 15 boxes until approximately May 18, 2022. Joe Biden lied, the White House lied, and now they are caught. Biden denied it all. We know well. Here we have a tweet, for example, from Curtis Hope. AP's Zeke Miller. The FBI served a search warrant on the Trump residence, which he or anyone at the White House... Was he or anyone at the White House aware of, or has he been briefed in the aftermath of that being executed? Jean Pierre, the president press secretary, no. The president was not briefed. No one at the White House was given a heads up. Meanwhile, Trump cleans the floor with DeSantis in a brand new poll. A poll released Monday shows that in the early primary state of New Hampshire, former President Donald Trump has a commanding lead over his Republican rivals for the 2024 presidential nomination. The St. Anselm College Survey Center surveyed 1,320 New Hampshire residents from Friday to Sunday. About 42% of Republican voters in the state support Donald Trump, who was arraigned on multiple charges Tuesday in Manhattan related to a hush money payment to porn actress Stephanie Gregory Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy Daniels, before the 2016 election. Trump paid her $130,000. The survey went up between Saturday and Sunday. In 2024, the Republican primary will kick off in New Hampshire. Trump's margin in Florida is 13 points higher than that of his nearest challenger, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, 29% to Trump 32%, followed by the former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, 4%, multimillionaire entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, 3%, comes New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu at 14%. There's something wrong with the addition here. Must mean 42. Florida Governor DeSantis, 29 to 42, and 13 would be 42, not 32. The samples calculate plus or minus 4%. The study found Biden is popular with just 45% of New Hampshire voters, while only 15% felt the country is headed in the right direction. The survey found that 34% of Democrat voters back President Biden, who's not declared his candidacy. The 2020 New Hampshire primary was won by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. And here again, they've got the number wrong. It says 11% of the vote, followed by former First Lady Michelle Obama with 14. I think Bernie had 21. Maybe 31, and Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg at 18, Kamala Harris at just 4%. The New Hampshire presidential primaries are less than a year away. In a press release, Neil Levesque, executive director of the New Hampshire Center of Politics at St. Anselm, said, Joe Biden's popularity is still below, incomplete sentence. Well, former President Trump and current President Biden are off to a solid beginning in their respective parties' primaries. A strong candidate in either may collect enough for an upset, though, since there are lots of potential votes distributed. Meanwhile, and I find this rather interesting, Roger Stone identifies a vice president that President Trump might consider. This will surprise you. Roger Stone shared this on his Substack. What about Bobby? Roger Stone shared his observation about Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s announcement he'd be running for president on the Democrat ticket with some observations and an idea. Here are some excerpts from Stone's Substack. With authoritative polls showing that only 37% of Democrats want President Joe Biden to seek re-election, the potential candidacy of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is both intriguing and potentially substantially impactful on the 2024 presidential race. Kennedy is a scion of the Kennedy political legacy, the nephew of President John F. Kennedy, and the son of former U.S. Senator and Attorney General Robert Kennedy, has a long record of environmental activism and support for other progressive policies. But it is his longtime criticism of the safety and efficacy of vaccinations for which he is best known. Kennedy raised concerns about the link between vaccinations and autism in 2015 and has emerged as the best-known critic of the safety and efficacy of the COVID-19 vaccines, culminating in his landmark book, The Real Anthony Fauci. The Democrat Party has changed very dramatically since Robert Kennedy's Uncle John ran as an ardent anti-communist, supporter of a major defense buildup, tax cutter, and supporter of a silverback dollar in 1960. President John Kennedy also became deeply suspicious of the intelligence services after being fed the flawed plan for the Bay of Pigs, as well as being surprised that U.S. intel provided no early warning that the Russians had mounted a U.S. targeted missiles in Cuba in 1962. Indeed, It is Kennedy's vow to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. That was among the probable causes of his assassination in 1963. As I documented in my New York Times best-selling book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. Mind you, now this is Roger Stone. Just as the Democrat Party machinery cheated Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders out of the Democrat presidential nomination in 2016 and again in 2020, that same party machinery, now within the firm control of Barack Obama, can be counted on to kneecap RFK Jr. in the Democrat nominating process. With Kennedy emerging as the leading vaccine skeptic in the country, and staking out an anti-globalist America First foreign policy view, those in Trump world will be wise to carefully monitor the progress of his candidacy. Just as a third of Bernie Sanders voters end up voting for Donald Trump in 2016, the votes garnered by Robert Kennedy could easily end up in the Trump column in November of 2024. Given America's state of peril, if RK prefers better than expected, the former president considered drafting RFK as the Republican vice presidential candidate in a bipartisan unity ticket. This idea is not without precedent. Senator John McCain really wanted Democrat Senator Joe Lieberman as his running mate in 2008, but McCain was ultimately talked out of the idea. It is likely that Bobby Kennedy Jr. will get railroaded by the anti-American Obama gang. He's not on the side of destroying America, and this will cost him dearly in the 2024 presidential race with D.C. elites. Kerry Lake and Ron DeSantis have been discussed as potential VP picks, but DeSantis may have blown his opportunity. Now, Bobby Kennedy is a potential suggestion. Let me just add, while I've been advocating Tulsi Gabbard, Bobby Jr. would make a sensational running mate to offset Trump's weaknesses vis-a-vis the vax and warp speed. We'll be right back.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, the most important issue I want to share with you today is a report just coming out from Alt Market US, republished by Zero Hedge. Project Icebreaker, the beginning of a one-world digital currency system. This may very well be the greatest threat to freedom ever produced by technology, which, while inherently neutral, can be used for good or bad. This, in my opinion, is an illustration of a virtual evil being promoted by digital technology. Brandon Smith, via altmarket.us, which I have published on my blog at jameshfetzer.org. There has been extensive discussion in the past few weeks within alternative media circles about the dangers of central bank digital currencies, CBDCs, a currency framework very similar to blockchain-based products like Bitcoin, but directly controlled by central bankers. It's a threat that some analysts, including myself, have been writing about for more than a decade. So it's good to finally see the issue being addressed more in the mainstream. The Orwellian nature of CBDCs cannot be overstated. In a cashless society, most people would be dependent on digital products for exchanging goods and labor. And this would, of course, mean the end of all privacy and trade. Everything you buy or sell or work for in your life would be recorded, and this lack of anonymity would be used to stifle your freedom in the future. For example, say you like to eat steak regularly, but the increasingly authoritative government decides to list red meat as a health risk and a climate change hazard due to carbon emissions from cows. It's all preposterous, of course, but there it is. They get it out there, treat it as though it were true, and act accordingly. They determine by your purchase history, to which they have full access, that you have contributed more carbon pollution than most by eating red meat often. They declare you must pay a retroactive carbon tax on your past purchases of red meat. Not only that, but your insurance company sends you a letter indicating you are a medical risk and they cut off your health coverage. Products you consume and services you use can be tracked to create a psychological profile on you, which then could become a factor in determining your social credit score, just as CCP authorities do in China today. Maybe you refuse to purchase an annual mRNA booster shot, and the tracking algorithm makes a note of it. Now you're under suspicion for being anti-vax, and your social credit score plummets, cutting you off from various public venues. Maybe you are even fired from your job. In the worst case scenario, though, economic access is the greatest oppressive tool. Really, constraining economic access. With CBDCs in place and no physical cash in existence, your savings will never be truly yours, and you'll never be able to hold your purchasing power in your hands. The means of exchange would be bottlenecked by the banks, and governments would have the option to freeze your ability to transact. If one day you get angry about a particular government policy and openly call the system corrupt on social media, they can simply shut off your option to transfer your digital money to others until you submit or die. CBDCs give establishment officials the leverage to starve their political opponents with algorithmic precision. It would be a new world of technocratic oppression. It's important to understand that central bankers are moving at breakneck speed to develop and introduce digital currencies. It's not a matter of experimentation. They already have these systems ready to implement. The Federal Reserve's Instant Transfer Program, FedNow, is set to debut in July, which is not a CBDC, but it is an intermediary step toward instituting CBDCs in the near term. In my investigations of various CBDC programs and how quickly they are progressing, I came across an interesting program called Project Icebreaker, being run by the Bank for International Settlements. For those not aware, the BIS is a globalist institution with a clandestine past, known as the Central Bank of Central Banks. It is the policy-making hub for most of the central banks in the world. If you ever wondered how it was possible for so many national central banks to operate in tandem with each other instead of acting in the interest of the countries they reside in, the BIS is the answer. In other words, organizations like the Federal Reserve are not necessarily loyal to Americans or to American officials. They are loyal to the dictates of the BIS. The BIS is at the forefront of the movement toward the adoption of CBDCs. They have been funding a vast array of projects to test and refine CBDC technology. And as of this year, they estimate that at least 81 central banks around the world are in the midst of introducing digital currency systems. Project Icebreaker, in particular, grabbed my attention for a number of reasons. The BIS describes the project as a foreign exchange clearinghouse for retail CBDCs, which are digital currencies used by the regular public and businesses, enabling them to be traded from country to country quickly and efficiently. This is accomplished using the Icebreaker Hub, a BIS-controlled mechanism which facilitates data transfers for an array of transactions while connecting banks to other banks. Here's a piece about it.
Communicating or sending large amounts of data around the world is cheap and easy. But sending money to another country is usually expensive and slow. The way money travels across the globe relies on many intermediaries, increasing the complexity, time, and cost of transactions. One of the main difficulties is that most payment systems are designed for domestic payments, not for international payments, and often do not communicate with similar systems in another country. The reasons for this vary, for example, due to differences in legislation and technical systems, and different working hours in various countries. The development of central bank digital currencies, CBDCs, and the underlying technologies that can be used could offer a solution. CBDCs used between consumers and merchants are known as retail CBDCs. Retail CBDCs could offer advantages such as faster transactions, more competition in payments, lower risks, and safety in the form of central bank money. Countries around the world are researching and experimenting with retail CBDCs, with many pilots underway. The central banks of Israel, Norway, and Sweden have joined forces with the BIS Innovation Hub Nordic Center in Project Icebreaker, which aims to explore how retail CBDC systems can be linked together to enable efficient international payments. Project Icebreaker is exploring a specific model linking national retail CBDC systems together. The Icebreaker Hub routes payments and allows national CBDC systems to talk to each other, despite being based on different technologies. In this project, different distributed ledger technologies used by each country for their proof-of-concept CBDC systems were connected to the Icebreaker Hub. Let's see how this works. Say Alice in Stockholm wants to send money to Noah in Tel Aviv to pay for a camera she bought online. When she enters Noah's payment address and the amount into her mobile app, the Icebreaker Hub helps her find the best available exchange rate. This is calculated from the rates foreign exchange providers submit to the Icebreaker Hub. Alice's payment is then broken down into two payments, one in Swedish e-krona to a foreign exchange provider in Sweden, and another in Israeli digital shekels from the foreign exchange provider in Israel to Noah. These two payments are coordinated using a form of digital escrow known as a hash time locked contract, HTLC. The payment from Alice to the foreign exchange provider will only be released if the foreign exchange provider has paid Noah. If no foreign exchange provider can exchange Swedish e-krona for Israeli digital shekels, the Icebreaker Hub will find a bridge currency, for example, Norwegian krona, that can be exchanged for both Swedish e-krona and Israeli digital shekels, and will use that to bridge the gap. Swedish e-krona are exchanged for Norwegian krona, which is in turn exchanged for Israeli digital shekels. The hub will always choose the payment path that is cheapest for the payer. The benefits of the model demonstrated in the project are: it enables cross-border interoperability, allowing systems with different technologies to talk to each other in a standardized way. It reduces settlement and counterparty risk by the use of coordinated payments in central bank money. It allows increased competition and choice for consumers by decoupling payers from specific foreign exchange providers, as well as through the use of bridge currencies. It helps reduce costs. It helps achieve increased cross-border reach. It is scalable, easily connecting the systems of many countries. It is fast. Transactions take just seconds to complete. And CBDC does not need to leave a national CBDC system. Project Icebreaker has demonstrated that central banks can implement different technologies for their national CBDC systems that meet their needs and enable cross-border payments with minimal requirements. Further areas of work are still necessary, but the lessons so far can guide central banks when designing their national retail CBDC systems. Project Icebreaker, breaking new paths for cross-border payments.
Well, you can certainly see how it would be convenient and beneficial from a banking point of view. The problem being that the benefits to the bankers are risks to you as a consumer because of potential constraints that can be imposed upon your freedom. Thus, we have further observations from Brandon Smith. Investigating further, I realize that the Icebreaker Hub, in theory, functions almost exactly like the SWIFT payment system using currently by governments and international banks. More than 10,000 financial institutions in 212 different countries use the SWIFT network to transfer funds overseas for their clients. It is an incredible centralization bottleneck that gives its shareholders considerable power. As a point of reference, after the start of the war between Ukraine and Russia, the expulsion of Russia from the SWIFT network was used as a weapon in an attempt to crash the Russian economy. Russia has found ways around using SWIFT because of their trade relationship with major economies like China and India, but some damage has still been done to their financial structure. Consider this, however. What if all monetary transactions were centralized through CBDCs and the BIS controlled the hub in which all retail CBDCs are exchanged globally? This is what Icebreaker is. Now imagine that you operate a business that relies on overseas transactions. Now imagine that you operate a business that relies on overseas transactions. Say you need to pay manufacturers in Vietnam or Taiwan to produce your products. With CBDCs in place, you'll most likely be completely dependent on a system similar to the Icebreaker Hub to move that digital money to Vietnam banks and then to the accounts of your manufacturers. Say officials at the BIS, for whatever reason, decide they don't like you, and they initiate Russian-style sanctions, denying your access to the hub. Your business is now dead. D-E-A-D. What if you had to meet certain standards in order to be allowed use of the hub, and the BIS dictates the standards? What if the BIS decides that your company needs to meet woke ESG-related categories before you can get permission for Icebreaker transactions? Now the BIS has the ability to manipulate social and cultural trends using your business and millions of other businesses as force messengers. For the average consumer who does most of their transaction within their home country, this might not sound like a big deal, but for the business world, a SWIFT-like hub for retail CBDCs can be used to dominate all international trade. Running any kind of larger organization or company would mean bowing to the whims of the BIS. It gets worse, though. Part of the process of the spoke and wheel exchange method used by the Icebreaker Hub includes the exploitation of a bridge currency to fill gaps in exchange rates and liquidity. On the surface, this seems like a clever way to speed up transactions by avoiding cross-currency shortages at banks. That said, I want readers to think about the long-term path this kind of bridging sets in motion in the realm of CBDC. Let's say there's a global-scale economic crisis event causing many currencies to fluctuate wildly. Let's see, for example, the U.S. dollar loses its world reserve status and petro status, and this sends FX, foreign exchange markets, into a panic. Price inflation becomes rampant. Banking institutions falter under liquidity pressures. But say that central bankers introduce CBDCs as a solution to the problem, and the BIS Icebreaker Hub as the intermediary for international trade. The populace is so frightened by the economic crash that they then embrace a digital framework. Now let's say that the BIS claims they still can't find a currency they consider stable enough to act as a means to bridge most global transactions. What happens then? Well, luckily for all of us, the BIS and IMF have been working on their own global CBDC. In the case of IMF, the International Monetary Fund, this one world currency would be based around the special drawing rights basket system they've been using for decades to broker currency transfers between national governments. The BIS then uses this one world currency product as a bridge and icebreaker going forward. Eventually, the BIS, IMF, and various central banks will ask the public the inevitable question. Why are we bothering with these national currency exchanges when we have a perfectly good bridge currency in the form of this one world CBDC? Why don't we just get rid of all these superfluous national CBDCs and have one currency for everyone? Thus, total global financial centralization would be achieved. And once you have a one world currency, a completely centralized and micromanaged global economy, and the most vital trade systems in the world controlled by a tiny handful of faceless, unelected bureaucrats, why then have nations at all? Global government would be the next and final step. I can see the nightmare play out when I look at projects like Icebreaker. They are seemingly innocuous, but they act as a DNA by which economic tyranny is given birth. Let me go back to that key part here as to how it affects each of us as individuals. Illustrating the Orwellian nature of the CBDCs. Say you like to eat steak regularly, but the increasingly authoritative government decides to list red meat as a health risk and a climate change risk due to carbon emissions from cows. They determine by your purchase history, to which they have full access, you have contributed more carbon pollution than most by eating red meat often. They declare you must pay a retroactive carbon tax on your past purchase of red meat. Not only that, but your insurance company sends you a letter indicating you are a medical risk and they cut off your health coverage. I mean, think about it. In a cashless society, most people would be dependent on digital products for exchange goods and labor. And this would, of course, mean the end of all privacy in trade. Everything you buy or sell or work for in your life would be recorded. And this lack of anonymity could be used to stifle your freedom in the future. Have no doubt about it. This is on the horizon. This is coming, and we ought to fight it with every resource at our disposal. Sad to say, those resources are extraordinarily rare, few and far between. By the way, you notice Roger Stone observing Obama's still running the shop. I believe that to be the case. Eric Holder as well. Well, listen to this. I'm not quite sure where this came from, but it's a a report that is very troublesome related to Barack Obama. Don't tell Big Mike. Well, that's naive because we know Big Mike is also a guy. So in a way, this shouldn't be surprising.
What do you do for a living, Mr. Sinclair?
Currently, I run a nonprofit in Cocoa building affordable housing.
Now, in 2008, when Obama announced his candidacy for president, you made some explosive allegations about him that dated back to some events that occurred in 1999. Is that the year that you met Barack Obama?
It is.
Where did you meet him?
Outside of a bar in Chicago.
What were you doing?
I was on a night out and I had asked a limo driver if he knew anyone that would be interested in showing me around the town. And it was clear for the limo driver that I was looking for someone to enjoy the night with. The introduction was made through the limo driver.
And what happened?
We had a few drinks. I had made some comments about wanting Coke. So we got in the limo and left. And we started drinking. I started snorting. He started smoking. I actually put my hand on his knee and started to rub up his thigh, and I performed oral sex on Barack Obama. The following day, I actually get a knock on my hotel room door in Gurnee, Illinois, only to find Barack Obama standing in front of it. He had actually come back for seconds. I performed oral sex on him in the hotel room at the Comfort Inn and Suites in Gurnee, Illinois.
Were there drugs involved on the second night as well?
There was.
Who produced those?
He actually brought those with him.
Now, Obama at that time was a state senator.
I actually had no idea who he was.
And then when did you find out that it was Barack Obama?
Watching the 2004 DNC convention.
Thank you very much, everybody. God bless you. Thank you.
And it hit me. And at the time, I was just kind of floored.
Good afternoon. My name is Montgomery.
I think we're all kind of floored by all of this. The truth needs to come out. I don't care whether one's gay or not gay, but the American people are entitled to know the truth about the individuals who are running for the highest office in the land. We'll be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Back on the air. Thank you. Well, there are some other stories I want to share with you today. They include Walmart closing 4 Chicago stores. This is interesting. The company noted collectively, our Chicago stores have not been profitable since we opened the first nearly 17 years ago. So it's not necessarily because of politics or Democrat policies and support for criminality. Walmart announced it'll shut down 4 Chicago locations, noting that 4 others will remain open, but that its Chicago stores have been losing money for years. The simplest explanation is that collectively, our Chicago stores have not been profitable since we opened the first nearly 17 years ago. These stores lose tens of millions a year, and their annual loss has nearly doubled in the last 5. The remaining 4 Chicago stores continue to face the same business difficulties, but we think the decision gives us the best chance to help keep them open and serve the community. The company claims it has endeavored to remedy the profitability problem, but to no avail. Over the years, we've tried many different strategies to improve the business performance of these locations, including building smaller stores, localizing product assortment, offering services beyond traditional retail. We've invested hundreds of millions in the city, including 70 in the last couple of years, to upgrade our stores and build 2 Walmart health facilities and a Walmart Academy training center. It was hoped these investments would help improve our store's performance. Unfortunately, these efforts have not materially improved the fundamental business challenges our stores are facing. Walmart claimed there was no action city leaders could take to help to solve the problems. Community and city leaders have been open and supportive as we met with them over the years to share these challenges. As we look for solutions, it became even more clear that for these stores, there's nothing leaders could do to help us get to the point where they would be profitable. The 4 locations were closed to the public by Sunday, April 16th. The pharmacies will remain open to serve patients for up to 30 days. The company's offered employees the opportunity to transfer to another store. All associates will be paid until August 11th, unless they transfer another location during that time. After August 11th, if they do not transfer, eligible associates will receive severance benefits. Here's another, and this is just in the Wisconsin State Journal today. I find it misleading. 4 in 10 drivers may go electric. 8% of all households have EVs, 8% hybrids. Yet they're saying as many as 40% might go electric. I don't think so. About 4 in 10 U.S. adults are at least somewhat likely. Somewhat likely. I mean, they might have the least inclination to go electric for their next vehicles, the new poll shows. But the history-making shift from the country's century-plus love affair with gas-driven vehicles still has a ways to travel. Yes, you can say that again. A poll by the Associated Press Nork Center for Public Affairs Research and the Energy Policy Institute at the University of Chicago showed the Biden admin plan to dramatically raise U.S. EV sales could run into resistance from consumers. Yes, you can count on that. About 8% of U.S. adults said they or someone in their household owns or leases an electric vehicle. Just 8% say their household has a plug-in hybrid, even with tax credits of up to $7,500 to buy a new EV. It could be difficult to persuade drivers to ditch their gas-burning cars and trucks for vehicles without tailpipe emissions. About 19% of U.S. adults say it's very or extremely likely they would purchase an electric vehicle the next time they buy a car, according to the poll. 22% say it's somewhat likely. About half, 47%, say it's not likely they would go electric. 6 in 10 said the high cost is a major reason they wouldn't. About a quarter cited as a minor reason. Only 16% said high cost would not be a factor in rejecting the EV. New electric vehicles now cost an average of more than $58,000. According to Kelly Buberg, a price beyond the reach of many U.S. households. The average vehicle sold in the U.S. today runs around $4,600. Tax credits approved under last year's Inflation Reduction Act are designed to bring EV prices down and attract more buyers. But new rules proposed by the U.S. Treasury can result in fewer electric vehicles qualifying for the full $7,500 tax credit. Many vehicles will only be eligible for half of the full credit, $3,750, which may not be enough to entice them away from less costly gasoline-powered vehicles. About three-quarters say too few charging stations are a reason they won't go electric, including half who call it a major reason. Two-thirds cite a preference for gas vehicles as a major or minor reason they won't go electric. Well, just a comment on that. To charge an electric takes hours. To fill your gas tank takes minutes. And what do you do during these hours while you're sitting around on your thumb? Go and have fast food? Eat cheap food? Pour on the carbs, add additional weight, squander time. For most, time is too precious to squander. It also turns out, of course, these electric vehicles have a very limited range, so you're going to have to stop more often and waste more of your precious time. I reported a trip in Wyoming between two cities that would take 3 hours by gas, but required 15 hours by electric. I mean, give me a break. Biden has set a goal of 500,000 EV charging stations nationwide, and $5 billion from the 2021 infrastructure law has been set aside to install or upgrade chargers along 75,000 miles of highway coast to coast. Electric car giant Tesla will, for the first time, make some of its charging station available to all U.S. electric vehicles by the end of the year, under a plan announced in February by the White House. A plan to open the nation's largest and most reliable charging network to all drivers is a potential game changer in promoting EV use. High prices and a lack of available chargers are cited by at least half of Democrats and Republicans as main reasons for not buying an EV. But there's a partisan divide in how Americans view electric vehicles. About half of Republicans, 54%, say a preference for gasoline-powered vehicles is a major reason for not buying an EV, while only 29% of Democrats make that same argument. In an encouraging find for EV proponents, polls showed 55% of adults under 30 say they are at least somewhat likely they will get an electric next time, as do 49% of adults aged 30 to 44, compared with just 31% of those 45 and older. People in the U.S. do see benefits to an EV. Saving money on gasoline is the main factor, cited by those who want to buy one, with about three-quarters of U.S. adults calling it a major or minor reason. Making an impact on climate change is another big reason many would buy an EV, but 35% say reducing their personal impact on the climate is a major reason, and 31% saying it's a minor. Well, let me comment on that as well. Where do they think electricity comes from in the first place? It's got to be produced typically by gas or coal or nuclear power plants. And what about the ingredients, the elements that go into making an EV battery, the principle of which is lithium? I've long been convinced the reason we remained in Afghanistan so long as we were looting the country of its precious mineral resources, which includes a largest lithium deposit in the world, absent one in Bolivia. But it involves a kind of strip mining of the environment to get all the precious metals required to put it together an EV battery. Child labor, environmental degradation, poisoning rivers and lakes. That's all part of this desire to have EV batteries. You'll have the potential to explode. And if you got to replace an EV battery, it ain't like you could go to Sears and pick one up for $50 or $100. No, it's going to run like $22,000. I think any enthusiast for EVs is based on basically based on ignorance and propaganda and the false belief in climate change, where Joe Olson and I have conducted, put together a series that debunks it quite thoroughly from top to bottom. The claim is that CO2 is supposed to be a hazard in the environment. Well, CO2 is necessary for life. It's instrumental in the production of both water and air. And in fact, CO2 in the atmosphere cools the earth in multiple different ways. So the whole thing is a farce, or complete farce. The AP NORC poll of 5,408 adults was conducted January 31st to February 15th in a combined sample of interviews from NORC probability-based Ameri-Speak panel designed to be representative of the U.S. population, with interviews from opt-in online panels. The margin of sampling for all respondents is plus or minus 1.7. The Ameri-Speak panel is recruited randomly using address-based sampling methods. Respondents were later interviewed online or by phone. Well, here's an article. Here's a piece about it. Check this out. Regarding your electric vehicle. Catching fire.
Electric cars have always seemed like the wave of the future. Countless movies have made us yearn for cars that run on batteries and can be charged from the owner's home. What we weren't prepared for is the possibility of these cars exploding like cell phones. Here's how to survive an exploding electric car. As of 2020, there were an estimated 6.8 million battery-powered vehicles in use around the world, with more than 3 million new vehicles added that year alone. Tesla, with more than 200,000 vehicles sold worldwide, is leading the charge, but most major manufacturers are developing their own electric models. Tesla is quick to point out that fires are still more common in gas-burning vehicles than in electric ones. But as your electric car goes up in flames, that may be of little comfort. Should you pour water on it? Are you safe when the fire is out? Why can it be more dangerous to be a passenger? Tesla claims that there have been roughly one Tesla vehicle fire for every 330 million kilometers traveled, compared to one fire every 30.5 million kilometers traveled in gas-powered vehicles. Europe is the biggest market for electric vehicles, with Norway reporting 7 of every 10 cars sold in that nation are running on batteries instead of fossil fuels. Electric vehicles are anticipated to make up about 1% of all U.S. vehicle sales by 2040, or an average of 2.5 million all-electric or hybrid cars sold every year for the next 20 years. As these numbers continue to increase, so does the possibility of you finding yourself in this dire predicament. Here's what you need to do. Step 1. Get out. As with many survival scenarios, leaving quickly is always a plus, but never more so than when a car is on fire. Get out of the car as quickly as possible and put some distance between you and the flames. If your car has doors with retractable handles not working properly, grab whatever you can to break out the windows or sunroof. And if you are a passenger, you are probably at the highest risk since the exploding battery case is very likely underneath your seat. When help arrives, firefighters will need to find the core of the fire and keep dousing you with water. According to a guide released for first responders, an electric car fire can take 24 hours to extinguish and almost 800 liters of water. Step 2. Stay cool. Once the fire has been put out, do not try to re-enter the vehicle. Some cars have been reported to have reignited several times over a few hours due to lingering hotspots. So it may not be a good idea to go back and look for the ring you dropped as you ran for your life. Step 3. Keep your guard up. It's important to remember that a battery explosion can be a threat to you even if you're not in the car. Just ask the California couple who were sound asleep when their Tesla Model S alerted them that its charge cycle was interrupted. Less than 15 minutes later, they received another notification. This time, a loud alarm letting them know their vehicle was damaged. It also alerted them that their house was on fire. The couple, who had two electric cars, were able to get out safely, but the original fire quickly spread to the other. This incident prompted warnings about not charging cars in garages overnight when they're left unattended. Step 4. Watch for water. If an unlucky crash into a power line is the cause of your battery's explosion, or you happen to be near a fallen line when a fire starts, take extra precaution since the car is still electrified. Throw some rainy weather into the mix could make the entire situation a major hazard, not just for you, but everyone around you. If you find an electric current heading towards you, don't worry. We'll tell you what to do to avoid that jolt right here on How to Survive.
I mean, think about it. Just one more benefit of having an electric car. It might burst into fire. You might be up a creek without a paddle, but don't worry, it only might only take 24 hours to put out the fire. Babylon Bee has a brilliant way of cutting to the core of the matter. Here's one of its latest. Riley Gaines arrested for making trans activists assault her. San Francisco. Former NCAA swimming champion and current women's rights activist Riley Gaines has been arrested and charged with forcing trans activists to physically assault her after giving a speech regarding protecting women's sports at San Francisco State University. Ms. Gaines has been taken into custody and booked, said university police spokesman Phil Shaw. She's been charged with forcing supporters of the trans community to assault her. This is a serious crime and will be treated as such. Any victims of violent beatings by trans activists will face swift justice. Gaines has become an outspoken critic of biological males being allowed to compete against biological females in women's sports, leading to activists calling for her to be silenced. Who is this woman who says women have rights? Said one angry activist. Those words are literally violence and are forcing supporters of the trans community to physically beat her. How dare she commit such a horrible act and make someone punch her? It's disgusting. University officials heralded the actions of the trans activist and the swift response by the campus police in dealing with Gaines' dangerous behavior. We're so proud of our campus police for their bravery, said a university spokesperson. Evergreen Stardust, they, them, not to mention the courageous actions of the brave people who assaulted Ms. Gaines. At publishing time, those San Francisco prosecutors had charged Gaines with a felony and requested that she be held without bail until trial sources had a special allowance to institute the death penalty was also being contemplated. They added an instructional video where Chinese soldiers are trained how to shout the wrong pronouns at American forces. I mean, give us a break. This is what it's come to. Simply absurd beyond belief. Absurd beyond belief. Truly outrageous. We're going to take calls, of course, after the break or even before. The number 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Here's another interesting piece, again from Russia Today, where you can find more reliable news than you'll find from any American news venue. Biden sought to threaten Putin, Seymour Hersh. The U.S. wanted to leverage a potential attack on Nord Stream to deter Moscow from an offensive against Ukraine, the journalist has claimed. The U.S. intended to use the threat of blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline to dissuade Russia from attacking Ukraine, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist Seymour Hersh has argued. In an expose published online in February, Hersh claimed the U.S. orchestrated the September 2022 bombing of the Baltic Sea pipeline built to deliver gas from Russia to Germany. Speaking to German online magazine Tykes Einblick on Monday, the journalist said President Joe Biden originally viewed the threat of sabotage as a deterrent. First claimed that plans for a potential attack began toward the end of 2021 when the U.S. was accusing Moscow of a military buildup along the border with Ukraine. The idea was to find something extraordinary that the president could use like an enticement or a threat to convince Putin not to attack Ukraine, Hersh said. Above all, it was a threat. I don't think this administration is very good at persuasion. They operate more along the lines of, you're with us or you're against us, the journalist added. The idea was to tell Putin, we'll blow up the pipelines if you cross the Ukrainian border. 2 weeks before Moscow launched its military operation in February 2022, Biden promised the U.S. would bring an end to Nord Stream if Russian forces entered Ukraine. We all remember him making those claims. Washington and its allies have imposed sweeping sanctions on Moscow and have supplied Kiev with heavy weapons, including tanks and artillery. How's that going? However, the White House has denied any involvement in the pipeline sabotage, dismissing Hersh's story as utterly false and complete fiction. Several news outlets claimed in March that a pro-Ukrainian group acting independently may have been behind the sabotage. Kiev has denied any involvement. Russia, meanwhile, insists that reports were aimed at deflecting attention from Hersh's investigation. Last month, the UN Security Council rejected Russia's call to set up an international commission to investigate the sabotage, even though, I would add, one would have thought it was a perfect example where the UN could do some good by investigating international crimes, war crimes, crimes against humanity, but no, not going to happen. Meanwhile, we'll be right back and we'll be taking your calls.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back.
Mitchell. There yeah, thanks. I had it muted. All right. Yeah. Mitchell, you're observing that Walmart is announcing they're going to introduce charging station at its stores. Won't that turn them into fire hazards?
Well, no, they're going to put them out there with the gas stations, so it'll just make the gas stations go boom faster. But don't worry. They'll have insurance, and the government will pay for it. It'll be a win-win for Walmart.
Wow. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Oh.
Your thoughts? Yeah.
No, it's, you have to understand this electric revolution is built on this petroleum, carbon-based, energy. And it's a pipe dream to think that you can change it over when you really don't even have sustainable electric vehicle anything.
Yes.
So it really is just a massive pull on everybody and everything around. It'll be a joke, in all honesty. It'll be the standard slap in the face as they retool the world and you pay for it. So, yeah. They'll upgrade. Listen, they want you to upgrade like they did your iPhones. Every time they had something come out, they wanted you to buy it. Now they're moving into this upgrade of everything, and cars don't even want to sell a car. They want to be they want you to have a subscription based everything. In fact, I saw a story that the federal government is moving to stop car companies from literally electronically locking down your vehicle when you're late on a payment. If you're going down the road and you're late on that car payment, your car may just, beep, 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 and give you a minute, says pull over, car stopping. And you stop, you get out, and then it locks you out of the car as it waits for a wrecker, from the tow company or the repo agent to come get your car. Oh my God. Yeah, listen, they have, when they bring in this central bank digital currency, and it's not a question of if, it's, there's no doubt. Okay, come on, mouse work. There's no doubt that they're attempting to do that. And it will be basically the digital enslavement of money. And you will lose your wealth if you don't use it and spend it. And then there will be people who will, I guess it's like trading that movie where they traded minutes of their lives, that they genetically modified humans. So at the age of 25, you were set to have one day of life left, and that the commerce, the currency of the time was the life minutes of everybody. So there were people that could literally not age and live 100,000 years or 100 years and have 1,000 years of life left. It truly is, you know, as today there are turning everything into a digital subscription and everything else. Hey, Brian, how you doing? Welcome.
Good, Mitchell. How are you doing?
I don't know. I'm working it out. That's all I'll tell you.
Okay. Can I make a comment real quick?
What's that?
Can I make a comment?
Sure, yeah. That's why I called and said, Brian, where are you at? Brian, hey, Brian, yeah. Come on, join the conversation.
What I wanted to comment on was the fact that when Walmart said, oh, we've been losing money for 17 years, I think that's total BS. I think what they're doing is they're trying to cover up for the fact that they're Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and homeless, and now they can, you know, people can go in the stores and, you know, steal everything, and they don't get prosecuted. That's
right.
Just a ploy to cover up the fact that that's the real reason those stores went belly up.
Yeah, well, you know, I spoke about on my morning show this morning, which I do on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. I said that, you know, Chicago, they closed four stores in Chicago. There are stores that have been closing up and down the West Coast. And a lot of that is, you know, the profit margins of these stores is pretty thin. They have that problem. The other thing that the Walmart stores that they closed in Chicago, I believe three out of the four were the Walmart markets. You know, they were the little Walmart stores that were like supposed to be like a neighborhood grocery store Walmart style. And that's, you know, the people have just been walk in and out and get whatever they want, basically. So, yeah, it's not like that everywhere, you know. It really isn't. That's, you know, the thieving and the robbery and the shoplifting and the mob, the flash rob mobs, as I call them, you know, because that's essentially what it amounts to. It's a flash mob, and they're just there to rob and steal and destroy. You know, they seem to be limited in specific locations. But, you know, it really is just like everything else. You know, once one person does it and once one crowd does it, you know, it breaks the taboo. You know, it makes it, you know, oh, somebody else already did it. It's okay to do it in the minds of many people. So then, you know, you have several people doing shootings or suicides or mob rob kind of attacks or all kinds of behaviors, you know, that we don't think about, and we forget that we are so subconsciously and automatically responding to so many stimuli that we often, you know, and kind of lose out. Does that make any sense?
Mitchell, I'm back.
Brian, you're still here.
Brian, what's on your mind, Brian? Give us your thoughts.
Well, there's Jim.
I already discussed the Walmart thing, and one other thing I just wanted to bring up is I was on Henry Macau yesterday. I know it's Macau, but I say Macau because then people can find it easier. It's MAKOW, Exposing Feminism in the New World Order. And he had a story on Alfred Rosenberg, you know, who was like the top shaman for Nazism, and he wrote a book, Track of the Jews Through the Ages. And you read it, and it just sends chills up and down your body because it tracks everything that's going on today. And I did not realize that in 1919, a transgender clinic was opened in Germany by Hirschfeld Kronfeld, we know what tribe they're from. And in 1933, when Hitler came to power, the Hitler Youth burned it to the ground. So it's interesting how this stuff just keeps coming back. I'm sure the Germans really appreciated having transgender clinics. So anyway, so that's all I had to comment on. If people want to look up that article, it just is amazing what's in that article.
Very good, Bruce. Did you have thoughts about any of the other stories I was reviewing today? Any thoughts? I mean,
I did. And I told Mitchell that BS about the Walmart not making money and that's why they closed it. I said, that's a lie. They're just doing that to cover for all the Antifa and BLM riots and, you know, all the flash mobs robbing and, you know, they don't want people to know that's the real reason they had to close those stores. So you know the story on Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart? Do you know about him? He was in charge of the concentration camp set up for the Japanese during World War II. So that just kind of shows you what kind of a person he was. And I think he was like your Bill Gates or Elon Musk of the day. I suspect he got his money from Rothschild and that's how he built his empire. So anyway. That's it. Hello.
Yeah, well, I'll bet you're right about Walmart, that just we're being kind to the Democrats because it's their policies and support for criminality that have caused the fiasco to take place here.
What I find interesting about how the dark work is it doesn't matter what it is, when they take it over, it could be the best political party. It could be the best organization ever with morality and spirituality, whatever it is, you know, something really good. And they can take it over and in a matter of time, turn it into something like the Democratic Party we have today versus what we had in the 60s. I mean, it's just amazing how they do that.
Yes.
Brian? Well, hey, Jim, I'm back. Hey, Brian, I just wanted to say you will be assimilated.
I don't think they'll assimilate me. I don't think they'll get any of us. I think we'd be dead before they'd assimilate us.
Well, I'm not talking about the Borg. Actually, I'm talking about the New World Order.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway. No, it's not going to happen. I know Jim doesn't believe this stuff, but we're in the golden age. We're in the age of Aquarius, and all this is going to fall apart. And I woke up yesterday, and I had this foreboding that something really big is coming. And so whether it's financial collapse or whatever it is, something big is going to happen and it's going to be their end. They can't really hang on much longer. They don't have any energetic base to hang on now. All the darkness and the non-physical is pretty much gone and all that's left is them and the physical. And if you've got a house without a foundation, a house of cards, it's going to blow over. And I think we're coming to that point. I wish Paul was there to defend me.
Well, you're not being attacked. I do have a comment about the discussion about the digital currency from someone I know very well. The article published this morning on One World Digital Currency controlled by central bankers as private parties, not by national governments, has been in the works for many years. It began with agitation of the American Civil War by large specie paying banking houses in Europe and the United States after the 1850s and is now coming to a climax. I have traced this development since I got involved in defending American farmers in an agricultural mortgage foreclosure crisis in the 1980s and started to read Lindbergh and McFadden to find out what was going on. So there's just further confirmation. But I think, you know, once it goes digital, I think we're all just reduced to the level of slaves. Bruce, your comments or thoughts on that matter, where I would assume we're in 100% agreement?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. It's Brian, by the way. But anyway, Brian. I read Eustace Mullen's Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and I found it interesting. You could trace a lot of all this through that book, because one of the things he pointed out is as soon as they got the Federal Reserve Act enacted, they pushed through, you know, their proxies in Congress, legislation that interfered with the American farmer. A lot of the American farmers after the Federal Reserve Act they went bankrupt and had to move to the big cities where they're more easily corralled. So they've been thinking of these things for a very long time.
Yes, yes, yes. Mitchell.
Well, Jim, it all comes down to the psychology. And they have programmed our minds, and now they believe they can program our biology. Eugenics and propaganda seem to come, well, hand in hand, don't they?
Yes, yes.
But we are living in the age of eugenics, and people may not, you know, think of it like that. But it has made a big comeback with the COVID craziness.
Yes, indeed. Meanwhile, court rejects. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say the eugenics thing ties in with the transhumanism thing and the Trilateral Commission, which was, I think that was put into play on like May 1st, you know, that communist day, 1776, which was 100 years from the 1776 founding of the Illuminati, whatever it was. And that was basically the start of all this transhumanism. But if you look at Billy Carter's cabinet, every one of those people I read somewhere was on the Trilateral Commission. And that's where they started putting in all this, you know, the cell towers, everything to turn us into half man, half machine. It originated with the Trilateral Commission, which was something that Rockefeller was real big on. So anyway, just things I read and retain over the years.
Mitchell, your further thoughts about any of the above?
Well, Jim, you know, these are world terrorist organizations. You know, while they all talk about Hamas and, you know, Iran and, you know, MAGA and domestic terrorists and everything else, you know, we have to understand, you know, that the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg Group, you know, the World Economic Forum, and a dozen other groups and affiliations that they have and exist and have spread their influence, those are the real terrorists. Those are the real threat to freedom around the world. And they believe that they can use communist China as a model. So, yeah, it's not looking pretty.
Yeah, well, not to be a broken record, but I do think this digital currency is such a huge scam, and it's just a monstrous threat. And I just wonder if the public has even the remotest appreciation of what it represents.
Not a chance in hell.
That's got to be right.
They're totally clueless on the central bank digital currency, not realizing that it is essentially the communist bean counters that believe that they control the means of production and they can make everything equal and equitable and everybody can pay their fair share because the money is tagged to you, tagged to the products, and tracked everywhere. So, you know, you might have a computer, but it will essentially be assigned to you through a central bank digital system that says you spent X number of dollars for this computer. And when you sell it, it will say what you sold it for. Now, will the government then say, oh, gosh, through depreciation, you still made, you know, $100 over time and then charge that to you? You know, if you want to keep ahead of every $600 transactions on every platform, you're going to need a central bank digital currency. And it is not like your debit card currency. It's not like that money. Every cent is essentially digitized and digitalized, tracked, racked, packed, and stacked, just as any computer file. And so every penny itself is essentially its own tracking system.
Yeah. Worse than that, they'll look at that Catherine computer and say,
I'm having a problem with my earpiece, Jim. I'm talking over.
Okay, not a problem. Go ahead, Bruce.
Worse than that, they'll look in that computer and see that I was on Jim Setzer every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So they'll say, no food for you. We're going to cut off all your digital shekels, and you'll just have to try and figure out how
yeah,
to
eat. I'll have my sugar, my sugar calories restricted. Yes. Because I watched Jim and listened to Jim.
Yeah,
that's possible.
We'll be in trouble because of you, Jim. We can blame you now.
There you go.
You ready to go on a diet, Jim?
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Just studying what's happened to this country in such a short period of time. It boggles the mind.
Well, you know, you may be only able to exist and buy tofu once they look at your record.
I can believe it.
I'm just jesting, but, you know, that's the central bank currency stuff.
I can say is when they ship us all off to FEMA camp, I claim top bunk between the three of us, okay? So top bunk for me. My joke for the day.
There you go. Fair enough. Well,
off to the Badlands with my RV. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Okay. Hey, we got under 2 minutes, Jim.
Well, let me just explain. There's a lot going on here at this end. If I sound distracted, I'm coordinating something rather important that I'll be sharing with everyone on the show on Friday. So
great.
I think they'll appreciate, you know, so much I've been working on in certain areas for so long may just be coming to fruition. So I just say, keeping my fingers crossed, but it looks like it's going to happen.
All right. Perfect. Under 1 minute.
Mitchell, had you known about this guy who was, interacting with Obama way back when? I guess that's not new news, but, man, I mean, when you get the actual witnesses out there, it's just so horrific.
That's not new news to me. But yeah, the Barack Obama date man.
Oh, is that a man? I thought that was a woman.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, so a very mild-mannered man. No. I don't think if that had been a woman, it would be news.
Well, maybe it would be news to Michael.
Thinking more about it, huh?
Anyway.
Well, I appreciate
you guys go.
Chris,
thank you.
Yep. Thank you for calling in, and we'll to be continued. I'm hoping to have a lot to share with you all on Friday. A lot to share with you then. So, thanks for being here. Spend as much time as you can with your family, friends, and people you love and care about. We don't know how much time we have.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...